This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Friday, April 26th. I'm John Wanamaker. Minnesota's Senate has approved a budget for state health and assistance programs that includes a surcharge on HMOs and pay increases for care workers. The Senate approved it on a 36-28 vote just after midnight Friday morning. The DFL-sponsored Health and Human Services budget bill contains $11.3 billion in spending to provide health care and other services to low-income Minnesotans. The proposal raises about $80 million from the HMO surcharge over the next 2 years. That is one of the differences between the Senate version and a separate Health and Human Services bill from House Democrats. Lawmakers from both chambers will meet to reconcile differences and agree on a bill to send to Governor Mark Dayton. Earlier on Thursday, the Senate passed a $15.7 billion finance measure for public schools that, just like the House version, funds all-day kindergarten statewide for the first time. The DFL-sponsored Senate Education Bill, which passed on a vote of 35-28, increases spending over current levels by $356 million. There is more money for the state's basic per-pupil funding formula, preschool scholarships, and special education. Some local property tax levies are eliminated under the bill. DFL Senator Chuck Wieger of Maplewood, the chair of the Senate Education Committee, said the spending increases are an investment in Minnesota's future.
We're very pleased in targeting certain areas that it's going to improve in our ability to prepare students for college and careers, particularly all-day kindergarten, fully funded. No student should be denied that opportunity based on their zip code.
Meanwhile, Republican Senator Sean Nino of Cambridge was critical of the bill's elimination of the current test high school students must pass to graduate.
A student no longer has to pass a test or get any score on a test, and a student doesn't have to demonstrate proficiency to graduate. What does that mean? It means your diploma is meaningless.
Democrats defended those changes, saying that student performance is better measured over time through a more comprehensive system rather than a single test. A bill passed by the Minnesota House that would increase taxes on alcohol has the hospitality and alcoholic beverage industries in an uproar. Supporters say the tax hike on beer, wine, and spirits is long overdue. Mark Zadeklik reports.
Supporters of raising the excise tax on alcohol say the state could bring in $200 million a year if people paid just 7 cents more per drink. Alcoholic beverage producers pay the excise tax. Supporters say those producers could recoup the expense by passing it along to their customers. They call it a user fee that the vast majority of Minnesotans would hardly even notice. Opponents say that argument misrepresents what will really happen if the tax goes up. Summit Brewing founder and president Mark Stutrud says his business could be on the line.
We're in a situation where taxation could not only stop our growth, but maybe eliminate our existence. And that's not an exaggeration, and I'm not whining. I'm just saying the facts.
Stutrud says if the House bill becomes law, Summit's state excise tax will jump to nearly 6 times what it is now. He says he'd pass the extra cost on to his wholesalers, who'd pass it on to retailers. He says they'd then tack on their margins and that customers buying a glass of beer at a bar or a six-pack at a liquor store would pay a lot more than 7 cents more per drink.
It's highly misrepresented. It doesn't reflect what actually happens in the marketplace. And the biggest disagreement that I have with this whole positioning is that it's sneaky.
State House Tax Committee Chair Ann Lincheski says if businesses that sell alcohol choose to pass along more than the amount of the excise tax hike, they, not state lawmakers, will be to blame for dramatic price jumps.
If the folks involved in the liquor industry want to get a little profit off their customers because they're hiding behind a user fee that has not been raised in 26 years, I think you need to ask all of them why they're choosing to go after their customers, because that's not required in the law.
If you go to places where alcohol is served, maybe you've noticed new posters with bright red block letters urging drinkers to speak out against higher alcohol taxes. Although Lincheski and other supporters of the increase say it would amount to about 7 cents a drink, the poster warns a case of beer will cost $3 or $4 more, even though 7 cents times 24 bottles equals less than $2. At the Loon Cafe in downtown Minneapolis, patron Sean Harrison of St. Paul was surprised to hear about the proposed tax increase.
I knew about the tax hike on tobacco, but I had no clue about any tax hike on alcohol.
And Harrison, who works as a bartender at a different establishment, said making alcohol more expensive will cut into his livelihood.
People will still come in, but they'll have less. They'll come in later and leave earlier.
Tim Mahoney is one of the owners of the Loon. He calls the alcohol tax proposal ridiculous and predicts significant increases in drink prices if it becomes law. He said smaller bars and restaurants in less prime locations than his could be forced out of business.
For me, I have a shiny new ballpark behind me, 365 steps behind me. You know, that makes up for a lot of ills. I'm going to survive. But you're going to come in here and you're going to be paying a significant a lot more.
People who work in the alcohol and chemical dependency treatment field would welcome the price increase. Ellie Skelton runs a women's treatment center in St. Louis Park. She said she and others would prefer that proceeds from the tax increase were dedicated to offsetting the billions of dollars in costs associated with alcohol abuse.
I would hate to see this just go to the general fund. This would be a user fee, and it should go to pay for the cost of alcohol in Minnesota.
The Minnesota Department of Health estimates that cost at more than $5 billion a year. Although the bill passed in the House, its future is uncertain in the Senate, where the DFL majority leader says there is not as much support for increasing taxes on alcohol as there is for bumping up the tobacco tax. Senator Tom Bach of Cook also says he thinks the tax would cost consumers more than 7 cents a drink. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
The first Republican hoping to challenge Governor Dayton says the governor's tax plans are sending the state in the wrong direction. Scott Honor, an Orono businessman, says he's running for governor to bring his business experience to the state capitol. Tom Scheck reports.
Scott Honor has no political experience, but he does have a solid business background. Honor is a former investment banker who has made most of his money in California. He said he and his wife grew up in Minnesota and decided 3 years ago to move back to the state. Now, he says he's running for governor because he thinks his business acumen will help Minnesota.
And when I look at the direction that we're going, I think having someone that understands the economy, understands how it works, some of private sector experience is the right way to take the state.
Honor is best known in Minnesota political circles for holding political fundraisers for Mitt Romney's campaign in 2012 at his $10 million Orono home. Now, Honor is focusing his attention on St. Paul. He says he's worried Governor Dayton's agenda is wrong for Minnesota.
His tax policy is taking us in the wrong direction. His focus on regulatory burdens is taking us in the wrong direction. And we really need to make a change. If we don't make a change, I think this state is going to continue to head in the wrong direction, and that's going to be a bad outcome for all of us.
Honor says he's concerned the state budget is growing too quickly. He says he'd cut spending by targeting the compensation packages of public employees, cutting aid to cities and counties, and making changes to how the state delivers subsidized health insurance. On social issues, Honor says he doesn't support a bill that would allow same-sex couples to marry in Minnesota.
Well, so I support the traditional definition of marriage. At the same time, I think the bill that Representative Kelly put forth to allow civil unions is one that is a great compromise, and I'd support that.
Democrats and their allies have been quick to criticize Honor's candidacy. They characterize him as a wealthy businessman who's out of touch with ordinary Minnesotans. Honor argues that he's proud of his business background and says he grew up in a middle-class home. Honor also says he'll seek the Republican Party endorsement, but left open the possibility of running in a primary if he doesn't win the party's backing. He also says he's willing to spend his own money on the campaign. Honor is the first major Republican to announce his bid for governor, but several more are expected to announce in the coming weeks. They could include State Senators Dave Thompson and David Hahn, State Representative Kurt Zellers, and Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson. Johnson says he intends to make a final decision in the next month or so. He says he thinks Republicans will want a candidate who's conservative but has a track record of winning.
That hasn't always been at the top of our list, at least recently, the can they win question, but I think it will be this year and next year because I think Republicans are realizing that Dayton and the Democrats in St. Paul right now are causing some serious problems. And if we don't pick the right candidate, we're going to have 2 and 4 more years of that.
For his part, Governor Dayton said he won't start worrying about the campaign until next spring, and he says he's now focused on doing his job as governor. Dayton said he's not worried about which Republicans are running at this point.
If there are 10 of them running, I'm not going to be my opponent, so I'm not going to spend time on that process. If they want me, ask me for my recommendation, I'd be glad to give it, but I don't think that's likely. So, they get to make their decision, and then the Independence Party will have their candidate, and then we'll go from there.
Dayton has tapped his own bank account in past races, but he wouldn't say whether he intends to spend his own money in 2014. He said that would be like the Vikings giving away their playbook. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Hundreds of high school students are taking the day off from school today to help place about 100,000 sandbags around Fargo to protect homes against Red River flooding. Students placed 700,000 sandbags in less than 2 days during the last flood in 2011. Forecasters have predicted a Red River crest ranging between 37 and 38 feet in Fargo-Moorhead. The river's record crest was 40.8 feet in 2009. Several incumbent Minneapolis City Council members are fighting to retain the DFL party's endorsement this weekend. Curtis Gilbert has more.
Councilmember Robert Lilligren saw his ward completely redrawn during last year's constitutionally mandated redistricting. He's now running to represent an area that includes a significant percentage of the city's East African population. And Lilligren, who's Native American, faces 2 Somali-American challengers. Councilmember Meg Tuthill also gained new territory during redistricting. She faces 3 challengers who have criticized some of the votes she's taken during her one term on the city council, including her support of the Vikings stadium. There are also Minneapolis DFL conventions this weekend in the wards represented by Lisa Goodman, John Quincy, and Sandy Colvin-Roy. DFL support carries considerable weight in Minneapolis politics. 4 years ago, every endorsed city council candidate was elected. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A Morrison County grand jury has approved first-degree murder charges against a central Minnesota man who allegedly shot and killed 2 teenagers on Thanksgiving Day. Little Falls resident Byron Smith said he killed 18-year-old Haley Kiefer and 17-year-old Nicholas Brady after they trespassed on his property. The grand jury found there was enough evidence to indict Smith on 2 counts of premeditated murder. Washington County Attorney Pete Orput is prosecuting the case. He says each count can result in life in prison.
A lot of the evidence we presented has to remain secret at this point, but it'll all get presented in trial. And I just ask folks to not make up their minds, wait and listen to the evidence as it gets presented.
Smith is a retired U.S. State Department security engineer. A statement from Smith's defense attorneys at Meshbesher & Associates says they'll continue arguing Smith was defending himself and his home. His pretrial hearing is scheduled for July 1st. That's the NPR News Update for Friday, April 26th. I'm John Wanamaker. Have a nice, sunny, and warm weekend. Thanks for listening.